Welcome to Scrappy ABM. This is your podcast with practical playbooks that don't break the bank. In this podcast, we dig into the exact playbooks that ABM practitioners are using today to get their first ABM program off the ground. We'll dig into how they're using their current tech stack in order to create scrappy programs that rely more on creativity than new technologies. So if you're looking for how to get ABM off the ground in your organization in the next 90 days, let's dive into this episode. Hello, in this episode of Scrappy ABM, you're actually going to hear where I was interviewed on somebody else's show. We just love the content so much. We wanted you to hear it and make sure that you got it. I hope you enjoy this episode of Scrappy ABM.
Hey everyone, it's Sam Keenly. Welcome back to Becoming a Hiring Machine. Today, we've got a special interview ahead of us. This is the third installment in our month-long series deep diving into all things account-based prospecting. So today's guest, he's no stranger to ABP or what's often called ABM, account-based marketing in the software space. His name is Mason Cosby, founder and CEO of Scrappy ABM. Many of you listening here are likely in the same place as the organizations that come to Mason for help. They know they want to get started with an ABP strategy, but don't quite know where or how to get started. So lucky for you, we have Mason to share what he's seen, learned, and recommends to others just like you. So without further ado, let's get into the show with Mason. Mason, welcome to the show, man.
Sam, thanks so much for having me. Excited to dig into it.
Oh yeah. I know you and I always geek out on all things ABM and in the marketing world. So I was just like, dude, we just kind of launched this thing over with recruiters. This is like right up your alley for the people that you work with day in and day out. So yeah, for those of you who haven't been stalking you for years, like I have, tell them a little bit more about, aside from that quick blurb that I just shared, like just tell them a little bit more about you and Scrappy ABM.
I've worked in primarily bootstrapped boutique businesses, often in the services space. And in the past 3 years, generated personally about $20 million in revenue at about a 16x ROI. So as we talk with recruiters, I feel very near and dear to my heart. On top of that, I actually ran a show called The Marketing Ladder for about 2 years that was focused on how to build careers. So I have spoken with many recruiters and really love the space. So hopefully we've got a couple of things that will be helpful for your audience today.
Music to my ears. So yeah, after Marketing Ladder, you niched down. You went into ABM of all the different things you could get into. So why'd you choose ABM?
When I think about account-based marketing, I think it is just the appropriate way to do B2B in general. B2B in and of itself is typically started, or most B2B organizations are started by somebody that experienced a problem that they then have the desire to solve for a very specific subset of people. As I thought through all the ways you could go to market, and specifically as we talk about your audience of recruiters, they only have so many people they can sell to. The idea behind account-based marketing is instead of saying, let's think about the persona and let's just put out a bunch of stuff into the ether, into the internet and see who comes back. The approach with account-based marketing is on the front end, we say, we know we work extraordinarily well with these kinds of companies, and then actually say, these are the exact companies we would then like to work with. So I love account-based marketing for the express purpose that I think it's exponentially more efficient because everything we do is then viewed through the lens of, does this help us engage the exact companies we want to work with? And then the other thing is, I recently heard this, I shouldn't say recently, it's probably been in the past 2-ish years, but the idea of just ethical selling and the idea of, I know with deep conviction that if you prospect, work with us, your life will be better. And when I think about the idea of ABM, it's just saying on the front end, I know with deep conviction, these companies that are an actual named list of accounts and companies, if they work with us, their lives will be exponentially better. So it's more efficient. And then I just sleep better at night because I know that we work with people that I can actually deeply and genuinely help. So that's why when I had the opportunity to niche down, I went super deep on specifically account-based marketing.
We've been talking a lot about niching as part of this and why it's so impactful. And most people think it's counterintuitive that the deeper you go into a specific specialty, the better you often do, because that's what you're so well known for. So a couple episodes back, I spoke about that with Anthony Pieri. We had a customer on about a month and a half ago, Dante Nino over at Tiello. He talked about the exact same thing. Not only does he specialize in construction, but like roofing within construction and just what they're known for, the expertise level that you're able to speak to. And they're just like, oh, you're not just another marketer that's trying to help me by saying you can do all the stuff cross marketing. It's just like, no, you're a deep subject matter expertise on this specific thing. And I know, like you said, like you're going to drive results because that's what you hang your hat on at the end of the day.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
Yeah. So before we spoke a little bit about ABM, ABP, like what are some of the alternatives. You mentioned just like throwing everything at a wall before, but what are some of the different acquisition strategies that you've seen and encountered with companies that are younger, trying to figure out how to acquire new clients, new customers before they land on account-based?
So when I think about account-based marketing, I want to give a quick frame. There are no new tactics that you would execute with account-based marketing that you wouldn't do with everything else. It's actually more of a strategic approach, which is, again, identifying first, who do we want to go work with? And then thinking through, now that I know the exact companies I want to work with, what are the best ways to get in front of them? What do they care about? Versus being more, I'm a recruiter that can work with the manufacturing industry. So now I'm just going to throw a bunch of stuff out there that's around general manufacturing, or honestly just general recruiting, and then hope that because I've put enough stuff out there that then people land on our website and book a call. So the other things you could do, and to be super clear, everything works. Outbound works, inbound works, ABM works, paid media work, all of it works. It's just what's the most efficient and best use of resources. What I see most people doing before they do account-based marketing is largely paid media programming on specific keywords, so that it's just like recruitment services, but it's not specific or specialized down into manufacturing recruitment in North America. If you see I recruit people versus I recruit manufacturing executives specifically in North America, I'm going with the second because that feels more like they're speaking directly to me if that's who I am. So again, we do general keyword paid media. We do general SEO. We do general social, maybe. And it's a lot of cold outbound. I see a lot of people just build a list of anyone they could probably talk to and then just try to get the immediate meeting. Or the final thing that I see often in the services space is exclusively referrals. So we just say, hey, thanks for working with us. Do you know anybody else? And we leave it then up to our customers to then help us identify who they should or who we should work with. So again, I love referrals. Referrals close super well, but there's actually an intentional and strategic way you can do referrals through account-based marketing. But we'll save that for a little bit later.
Okay, I like it. Who is ABM, like taking this type of approach, who does it work well for? And is there anyone that it might not work well for?
Yeah, when I think about these kinds of programs, generally what we are looking for is very clear, what we refer to as product market fit. Now, if you're a service, you're like, I don't have a product. If you have a productized approach or a very unique perspective that fits a specific market, that's what we're primarily looking for. Another way that I've heard it said is message market fit. So it's how you frame your service and how you speak to your service, a match for what your market is looking for. And then also in your packaging and your pricing model, do those things work for your market? So that's the number one thing. Because if we go back to that thought process around ethical selling, I have a deep conviction that I know what we do and how we do it will make the prospect on the other end, it will make their life significantly better. If you don't have a message market fit or a packaging market fit or a product market fit, or however you want to say that, you don't know where you fit in a market. You cannot ethically claim, I know that for this market, we do it better than anybody else and their life is going to be better. So that's the number one thing that I'm looking for. Second thing would just be some form of high price point. Typically, we're looking for a minimum, and this is absolute minimum, of 30K. If you're like super niche and specialized, what I typically actually prefer is a minimum of a general like 50K ACV. And when we talk about ACV, that's for the company. So as an example, in the recruitment space, if they want to hire one SDR, SDRs typically are going to make somewhere in the ballpark of 40 to 50K, unless your pricing model is based on their OTE, which stands for on-target earnings, then maybe 25% of a 120 OTE, that might be worth it for one SDR. Versus, hey, this organization is looking to hire 10 SDRs. That's a high average contract value for that company. So we look at it on a company level of what's the average contract value, or the other way that I've started to dig in really nerdy is LTV to CAC. So what is the lifetime value of this company for our business as compared to what it costs us to acquire that relationship?
Yeah, and that's one we talk about a lot. It's how do you get past being a single-use recruiter? You're brought on to make one hire, but like how can you embed yourself with them over time where it's like you've worked with that hiring manager before, you know, they're going to hire four other people like this, or a different department might need to make a hire. But how do you, you've gotten the foot in the door, you've done the hardest part, you've gotten that new business, how do you retain it and keep it? So yeah, I like that. How do you think about the LTV to CAC side? So lifetime value to customer acquisition cost, for anyone that doesn't love our marketing acronyms. Yeah, really using and getting into those. What are common pushbacks you hear? Why might someone be hesitant as the person who's executing this, or is doing another strategy that works well enough? For those of you listening, I'm doing well enough and bunny quotation ears. Or for someone who they believe in it, but they might have a leader or a buying committee that's just, I don't know, I don't think that we should be pursuing that.
Yeah, it depends on the size of the organization that you are. So I'll give large organizations first and then we'll move smaller. If you're a really large organization, what often happens with marketing and sales is it functions more like a relay race. So marketing does a bunch of stuff to generate a lead, and then we pass that lead to sales, and then it's sales' responsibility and job to close that deal. And if you lived in that model, then sales is really protective of their leads, because marketing getting back involved to help close a deal may screw up the relationship. And I'm putting that in bunny ears as well. So that transition is difficult. And then the other thing that we've seen come up way more is just comp structures. Like, sales is often not incentivized to work with marketing, literally. And the most prime example is sellers get higher commissions on self-sourced deals than marketing-sourced deals. So as an example there, they will literally make less money if they give marketing the credit. And then marketing gets ticked because they're not getting credit for the work that they're doing, which causes misalignment. So if you're in a larger organization, it's often misalignment between marketing and sales. It's also, this is all across all organizations, that aversion to niching down, because we are intentionally saying, I'm not going to work with certain kinds of people. And some of those people may have a pulse and a credit card. And that's tough, because if they have a pulse and a credit card, they could buy from us, but they're not the best customer. And what I would encourage everyone, especially in a services business, is don't just look at revenue, but look at the amount of time, energy, and effort that we spend on a specific customer, and then actually put a value associated to your time. One of the things that we do as a business is we time track. So we actually time track where we invest our time on every client to understand the client's profitability. And it's harder to measure profitability in a service business, because like, my costs are fixed. So any client, but working 60 hours in 1 week for one client to the neglect of all your other clients, and as a result, you put all the other clients at risk, that's not a good investment. So again, when I think through the reasons people say no, it's those components of, yes, the alignment component, it's the intentionally excluding other people. And then the other component is high paying customers typically take longer to close. So if you are starting to move up market, I was talking to somebody about this, that's in a small or early stage business. And he's like, how do I navigate these really long sales cycles in the mid-market, the enterprise space? I was like, how much money do you have in the bank? He's $0. And I was like, you can't then. Like, these things will just take 60, 90, 120 days to close. And then they're going to have like net 30, net 60, net 90, net 120, net 180 payment terms. So if you want to move up market to very large deal sizes, you also need the cash to sustain, because you'll do the work and you won't get paid. And now that's very standard for the recruitment space. But again, we're talking not just a single role, but ideally 10 roles or an executive role that's super hard to find the right person for. So those are the objections, because quicker cash is quicker. But if you only live in quick cash, you never end up getting higher profit opportunities that just take longer to close.
What about for the smaller companies where it's, you've got the one person doing it all? Because that's what a lot of the agencies and recruiters listening to this, it's like they're doing all the recruiting and the business development, the relationship management. So they might already be doing something to drive new clients, but there's always that, I don't know, what I'm doing is working well enough, or what's the learning curve? Is there going to be a drop off in my pipeline's already not great? Am I going to lose the existing pipeline while I'm building up this new stuff? Like, how do you handle that side?
If you're a smaller organization, I would determine first your aspirations, because admittedly, if you don't have aspirations to be a larger organization, what you're doing might actually already be working well enough. So I want to go ahead and call that out. If like you're a 5-person organization and you're fine doing $1 million a year, like, you can live on referrals. Just know you're going to have a really volatile pipeline. and it's going to be tough for you to ever have more than a glorified job. So sorry to say that. And for context, I'm 2 years into building Scrappy. We hired 10 people this year and we're a 15 person organization. So I don't even know that I'm out of it, but like, I still think I have a decently glorified job with some moments here and there where I'm like, oh, I'm actually a CEO. So hear me say that as somebody that's like in it. So if you do want to grow a larger organization and you want to scale, building these kinds of programs and processes gives you predictability in pipeline generation and your ability to then forecast beyond the next quarter. So that's why I would make the time investment. And if you're doing it all and you have the desire to scale, I just want to give everybody additional quick context of you're going to have to work today's job and tomorrow's job. So like, this is 60 to 80 hour work weeks to scale, because you have to do all the jobs. But if you want to get out of that, my family did 80 to 130 hour work weeks for about a year. When I say my family, because my wife also worked for free to help get the business off the ground, but we're now out of that. And I average like 50 hour work weeks. So I'm just giving everyone that context of, that's not ABM. This is more like business strategy for a moment. Mm-hmm. But if you want to have a more predictable, scalable business, building an account-based approach where you can actually determine the best customers that you want to work with that are the highest profit will actually allow you to scale without additional expenses and headcount, because you just replace bad clients with great higher profit clients. And again, the LTV to CAC analysis, your CAC decreases dramatically in that ratio because you get higher paying clients to stay with you for longer and send you more work. So then you're doing less on the biz dev side to continue to grow and more just on the retaining side because you become ingrained in their business. So
no one listens.
That's my TED talk.
No. that sounds terrible. That sounds way too good. Yeah. You said a couple words in there that I think ring true and definitely lead to like emotional feelings. It's like volatile pipeline, predictable pipeline. Like those are very big. And even, I would say, even if you don't want to grow your company that much, just removing that volatility for predictable recruiters, they're relationship driven at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. What account-based prospecting is doing is you're mapping your entire ideal customer profile audience, like those that you could actually work with, like you've just spoken about, that you know will have a high LTV to CAC ratio, but you're front loading all of the work to develop the relationships with them. So even if you're not trying to grow and get a bunch more customers by starting those relationships, having those in place, like should one of your customers drop off, one of your clients fall away, like you can also say like, hey, we're capped at this rate. We have two of us, we only take on these many job recs per year, whatever, but one just fell through, so we have an opening now. You can almost do the, I call it like the line outside the club approach, where it's,
yep,
people are clamoring to come and work for you, so it can work to your favor where you don't have to keep growing, but you can at least have that stability ready for you.
It was really fun. I'm going to tell a very brief story of like our scaling journey, because we had that where we ran out of capacity. So what I actually did at the end of last year is I looked at our best customers and said, well, I want to go get more of those. So we built a target account list and then we raised our rate by 40% and actually overhauled some of our deliverables to do slightly less, but it was the stuff that our customers wanted us to be doing, because we surveyed our customers and said, what do you actually pay us for? And they told us we were doing a bunch of stuff that no one actually cared about. So we then stopped doing those things, focused more on the things they actually cared about, and raised our rate by 40%, and then went from doing 100 a month to 200 a month in 4 months. And then I was able to hire 10 people. So we created a situation through an account-based program that allowed us to actually be supply constrained. And then we got to pick our customers. And then the most freeing thing as a small business owner is the ability to fire your customer without fear. So that is not account-based strategy. This is, again, small business strategy now. But if you want to get there, building an account-based program that is based around, I know these are who we best serve, these are people that pay us the most, that stick around for the longest, that get the most value from us, that send more customers like them. Let's just go get more like that through account-based programs.
Yep. Music to my ears. All right. So Mason, I'm sold. We need to do account-based prospecting. I'm ready. We've never done something like this before, though. This is all brand new to us. And for those listening, you might hear our little one. She just woke up from her nap. She is having a blast downstairs.
She's having a great time.
He's got a little one, too. We're both just at the end of the day. We can't wait to go have some family time. So I'm not even going to apologize for that. They're having a blast. Hopefully, yeah, Everyone gets to experience something like that at some point. But yeah, so starting from scratch, you work with companies all the time where it's just like, all right, we're bought in, we're ready to do an account-based prospecting strategy. you're the expert. What do we do? Whether it's a blank slate, whether it's fixing things from previous, but let's walk through it and get tactical here.
Yeah, so there's two core frameworks that everyone should walk through. So framework one is what we refer to as our account progression model. Some people call it a buyer's journey. Some people call it a funnel, whatever you want to call it. But every one of your customers, before they can buy from you, must first know you exist. So you need to have some form of program that is designed to generate awareness. So we first say, are we doing anything that generates awareness? That could just be referrals. And for a lot of people that are earlier on, it's just referrals. So your network tells their networks that you exist. And that's your awareness program. Then we need to get some form of what we refer to as initial engagement program. Initial engagement, I think through as, do our accounts know they have a problem? No one buys solutions unless they have problems. So we want to create programming that helps educate them on the problems that they're experiencing. And then we get into meaningful engagement, which is they're exploring viable solutions. So they may be posting on LinkedIn, hey, we're hiring these roles. They may be doing job boards. They may be downloading job description templates for specific kinds of job descriptions, like things that show they're exploring viable solutions to fill roles that they have. And then we get to what we refer to as an MQA. Easiest way to think about it is a right fit account or company or the people that we would want to speak with have viewed our services pages, our pricing page, and our schedule a call page, or maybe some specific case studies. If they viewed those things but didn't book a meeting, we know that they understand how we uniquely could help them, but they were not yet compelled to book a meeting. This is where we typically activate some form of an outbound program, but not for the purpose of, hey, you want to book a meeting? It's really easy to book calls. Just go to the website and press the button in the top right-hand corner that says, let's chat. No one needs help doing that. What they need help is being convinced that you're worth their time, which is where we then follow up with more ROI, or in this context, speed to fulfillment or satisfaction from hiring managers or replacement rates or things along those lines that are directly related back to decreasing perceived risk of working with you. That is what we would view as our SQA or re-engagement stage. And then they book a meeting, and here we're qualifying for budget and timing. This should not be a qualification for fit, because they should already be a fit because you added them to your target account list. So we just want to make sure this is a real opportunity right now, and they have the money to pay us, and then you run your standard sales cycle. So that's the first framework. It's just, do we have programs that actually guide our buyers through those things? And for quick context, you can do that as new business development. You can also do that in pipeline, in your pipeline stages in your sales process, should you have that, which if you don't, highly recommend it, super helpful. But have a sales process and then run programs that are directly addressing objections and blockers in your sales process. The average B2B decision involves 8 to 14 people. So you're not going to just get sign off typically from like the one hiring manager. They're going to go need to get budget approval. They're going to talk with their team, market to that entire organization and prospect to that entire organization. And the last thing, expansion. You got the one role. Congratulations. They also have to be hiring across 5 other departments. How do we then create mini case studies on the success you had with one area of their business and then market that and run awareness programming to all the other departments? And like, you actually do the same stuff on the customer expansion side to different departments, or you make them aware of all the kinds of roles you actually hire for. So this is not just new business development. This is also pipeline acceleration and customer expansion. So again, that is framework one. There's a second one, but Sam, I'm going to pause for a second.
Yeah, no, that's a masterclass in itself right there. I'm already taking notes on things that I want to get into. What area do you see when most are getting started with this? Where are there the biggest gaps? Because, I mean, word of mouth is always strong. I don't want to say it's easy. You have to provide a good service to get to that. Yeah. But I have a feeling somewhere in that step two, step three area is where most organizations are missing areas there.
Yeah, I got convicted of this recently. Our own team has been putting Scrappy ABM the business through our Scrappy ABM process. And I was like, we crush it on awareness. I do a lot to try to make sure people know we exist. So I was like, we killed on the awareness stage. Like, we need some help in that like meaningful engagement stage. But on the awareness piece, we're great. And this one was like, I Googled ABM agencies and Scrappy ABM didn't show up on the first 10 pages of Google. And I was like, okay, we got some work to do on the awareness front. Like, it's not. So one, we may have blind spots. that we think we're killing it in certain areas, but then we're not showing up where our customers are. So that's the first thing. And then the second thing is, when we think about this, we over-engineer it. So like one thing that I just realized for us is we had no middle funnel assets that were at that meaningful engagement stage other than like literally book a call. And I used to take pride in that of like, people discover us on LinkedIn and podcast and then on these webinars and speaking engagements. And then they go to our website. And I used to say, it's a buy my crap website. So you buy my crap or you get out. And I would say that with pride. And that was dumb because there are certain people that need case studies. They need testimonials. They need some form of ROI calculation. They need to be shown, I wouldn't be crazy for booking a meeting. So we added services pages and we just added an ABM program planning template. And we created more middle funnel type assets that help boost our credibility and help them with small problems today. So like some people just need a template to know how to plan out their ABM program. And guess what? I didn't have to create anything because we already do that. Like we had a template already for our delivery teams. So we just branded it. We removed out all the like any customer information. And then we just threw it on our website and people now get it for free. So we didn't have to go make anything else new. If you're a recruiter, you likely have tons of templates. So just make your templates publicly accessible. And now you've got middle funnel content. So those are the things that are huge gaps that I see often. They're not super crazy difficult to fix. Just look at how you deliver, especially as a service business, and then make those things publicly available. And then people get freaked out. They're like, whoa, I'm going to give everything away. Why would they hire me? Give away all the education and the information. And we're about to actually even release more and more templates. We're going to actually give away all of our templates. What people would then pay us for is the correct order of implementation and to have it done for them.
Yeah, I'm with you. Education is out there now. Like people can find the answers that they want, but the ability to execute upon it, to put it in the right order, like you said, to do all that, yeah. that's where the magic lies. And the more that you can get that in front of them, like that's only bolstering your case for them wanting you versus, oh, they're going to take it and run. It's like, those are value adds to them. And they're just like, I didn't even think about this. What else am I not thinking about that they're holding back from this?
Yeah, couldn't agree more. So that's framework one, which is helpful as you then think through the strategy. Framework two is where we get super tactical. So at every single one of those stages that we outlined, there's a 4D framework that you need to fully implement these programs. So first is data. So data is targets plus triggers that create personalized messaging. I can almost guarantee that everyone listening to this has gotten a cold email today that says, hey, it looks like you run a recruiting service. We help recruiters just like you get 15 plus meetings per week. Targets, so that's helpful, but they didn't have a trigger. They didn't have a reason to reach out. There was nothing personalized to you in that relationship between the business. So AKA, they just did called outbound and they'll have a 1-3% conversion rate to a meeting. And then from there, who knows what those meetings turn into? That's where the sales process gets into play. But just pure cold outbound, you're looking at 1-3%. And 3% is like crushing it. So that's why data is so critical. We need great people to reach out to with great reasons to reach out that then creates personalized, nuanced messaging. So that's data. That then gets into distribution. Distribution is just simply, how do we actually get in front of these people? So that could be an email, could also be social, it could be events, it could be a dinner, it could be a podcast. Like all of these are just ways to get in front of people. So think through, how do I get in front of my audience? Next is then destination. Most small organizations that we speak with, this is the biggest thing that they're missing because they haven't made the time to create destinations. They don't have things to send people to other than book a meeting with me. So we don't have case studies. We don't have landing pages. We don't have content. We don't have events that we're hosting or webinars or a podcast. We don't have anything other than book a meeting. So this is a huge gap for people that if you solved this would help you grow your business because you actually have something to lead that is valuable or you have something to lead in with that is valuable. And the last thing is then direction, which is just simply how do we plan to track it? So when I break it down into if we know who we're going after, why we're reaching out, what we're saying to them, how we're getting in front of them, where we're sending them to, and how we measure success, you actually have a repeatable process you can run over and over again. And you do that at every stage of an account progression model. And it's really hard to lose because you've actually mapped out for the customer. Here's how we move you from, you don't know that we exist, to you're actually becoming a customer because you helped your customer think through the process. The other thing that I think a lot of people miss, which is you've had these same conversations as a recruiter 1,000 times. The hiring managers that you're speaking with may not. They may have had this conversation 10 times. So you can actually pre-think for them what they should be thinking through, which then makes you a trusted, valuable partner. And you guide them step by step so that you make the process easy, which is what you're doing in your delivery mechanism. I'm just saying do that before they're a customer through marketing.
Show them the path. Yeah, that's one that's so underrated. It's like things that are obvious to you are not always obvious to them. And it's because of the sheer number of at-bats that you've got and the scenarios you've been exposed to, all the cases. And that's a huge part of your expertise. It's like, yeah, you think hiring's easy, but have you accounted for what happens in this scenario or how you're going to think about contingency 1, 2, 3, 4, 5? That's where you add a ton of value, that just having those frameworks and everything else, like those are great to get them in. And this is where you really get them hooked. So on this front, so we've talked about the 4 D's here. Let's start with the first one, like data. How are you recommending companies get started with thinking about just like their ICP list, their target account list? Because again, it's, oh, we hire for construction companies. They may have just buckshot at everyone else. Like, how are you guiding them through the conversation of going deeper, getting more specific? Like, what are some of the questions that you're asking, or any templates, frameworks that you're having them go through here?
Yeah, I can share a template that we've been using to help just identify the LTV. So when I look at it, it's revenue as the very first thing. And that it depends on the model. I've worked with some recruiters that if you had lots of people to hire, they actually just like a monthly retainer. We have other recruiters that we've worked with that are percentage based on a sourcing fee, or it's percentage based on an ongoing basis. So again, look at your model, your money model for how do you actually make money, and then create an expected revenue or a current revenue. So for us, we're primarily a retainer based business. So that's monthly multiplied by expected retention, which then creates expected revenue. We then break that down by industry. We further break that down by business models, company size, company revenue, and then team structure. So we're actually looking at, for us, we don't work well on our ABM programs. That's like our full-scale programs. These don't typically work well unless there's at least 2 or 3 marketers in-house, because ABM is it's a larger program that can piggyback off of somebody else's program. So for smaller businesses, we then also have our podcasting arm that takes ABM principles and puts it into the form of a podcast. In that side of the business, we actually work exclusively with founder-led organizations or executive-led organizations, where executive-led podcasting. So like, Sam, you're an executive, you're here hosting the show. Like, we work with organizations where the executive is hosting the show as a part of our team structure. So again, if you're a recruiting organization, if they have an army of recruiters, depending on the kind of recruiting organization that you are, that may be a great sign for you that they're massively hiring, and there may be weird niche roles that you specifically fill that they can't figure out how to get. So that might be a good thing for you. But also, if they have on-staff recruiters, it may be a bad thing for you. It's like understanding team structure, specifically in a service-based business, is, I think, one of the most underrated components to the ICP. And then from there, it's looking at the cultural components of what made it easier to upsell. What is our CAC payback period? And then what is our margin by customer? So we want to understand how much money do we actually get for the work that we do. So all of that is LTV and CAC blended, but it's all primarily focused on the sale and the upsell component. The other thing that we look at is the delivery side, which is, was our team a fit for their needs? Were our processes a fit for their needs, SOP fit? Did we have to completely rework our processes over and over again because of weird things about them as an organization? What was the communication burden? So was it super easy and light and we could just use our standard templates? Or are we having to do like text, email, Slack just to get in touch with somebody? And then what's the escalation risk? Especially for founder-led businesses, if you're trying to grow, people that feel entitled to you personally as the founder are a higher escalation risk. So we've been growing as a business, we've actually been looking at what is the length in which someone has had a relationship with me personally to even actually then determine escalation risk. Because somebody's known me for 5 or 6 years, and we've had tons and tons of calls, and I'm like, great, work with our team. High escalation risk because they have my cell phone number versus someone that's been following us for 6 or 7 months and doesn't know a Mason before Scrappy ABM, lower escalation risk. So we're going to work through all of those things in the context of the actual delivery to then also inform, is it worth the time, energy, and effort?
That's such an underrated one until you experience it and then you fully.
We
can attest to that here. Matt and Ilya all the time, they'll get text emails from customers that early days that like new customer signs on recently. They don't even think to go to the CEO, CTO with anything, but these are people who were sold by our CEO, who the CTO did the implementation. So it's, oh yeah, like we fully get that. So like you said, there's different things from the escalation side, but there's also the expectation, and that's how well like your team, if you truly become subject matter experts in the field, there's some organizations where your clients are buying the founder because of their expertise, their knowledge, their face on the company. And then when you hand it off to someone else, it's not them. They're just like, wait, hold on. I bought Mason. Who is this? Does this person understand us, get us? They have that knowledge. So having a team where that's the power of when you niche down and you have your whole team that truly are SMEs versus trying to be generalists across multiple industries, that's another thing that can drastically help that escalation risk.
Oh, yeah. And this is another thing. Sorry, this is small business advice, not like account-based marketing advice. The first batch of people I hired were all junior and generalists, and I fired all of them. I pay a lot more now, but I hired people that are actually better at the things that I hired them to do than I would be. So I can easily delegate because I know it will actually be done better than if I were to do it myself. And I have that level of conviction. And I talk about it fairly publicly. I'm not the best at everything. Surprise. But when I can then delegate it and it's an actually better experience, the escalation risk also decreases. It's just that early component that we need to work through. How do we effectively early, if you're founder-led business, transfer trust? Because if you don't transfer trust well and actually have an intentional process for how you transfer trust, it won't be. And as a result, you'll never actually be able to scale.
I want to touch on the other two of the other D's real quick. Delivery first. We'll get to destination after that. ABP. A lot of people are just like, okay, I know who I want to be working with. Do I email them? Do I call them? Do I text them? Do I run ads? Do I send them mail? Do I take them out to lunch? Like, it's almost overwhelming when you think about all the different ways that you can go and you're not always sure which. So do you have a methodology that you recommend for experimenting across a number of channels, some type of research that you do beforehand to figure out which one to start with? Do you say that start with one and scale? Do we say that start with three and pull back? How do you recommend those that are starting from scratch with this approach, the delivery side?
So when I think through the distribution channels, what we primarily focus on are, one, what are you already doing? Because if you are already doing it, then it's not an experiment. And the experiment is in the targeting component. So that's the first component. So if you're already doing something, like I'm not going to go to a recruiting founder that's been doing cold outreach and say, you should learn paid media. Like that's tough. That's not a great idea. But inevitably, as you scale it, the general best practices are going through what we refer to as indirect channels higher up in the account progression model versus direct channels. So indirect would be things like paid media programming or organic social or to some extent events. Because if you go to a conference and then you happen to bump into somebody, it's indirect, it's serendipitous. Versus direct channels would be DMs, Slack, email, calls. Sam, at this point in our relationship, if you were to call me, I'd be like, what's up, Sam? If we rewind to when you were at Refine Labs 5 years ago and I didn't know who you were and I didn't know what a Refine Labs was and you call me, I'm not answering. So when I outline it like that, and you referenced it earlier, this is a very relationship-led industry. This is just outlining what are the appropriate delivery mechanisms or distribution mechanisms that we want to get in front of people that align with the level of engagement that they've had with our brand and the expectation that we have set with them. So another thing that I do is we'll host a webinar and I will say to them, that everybody that's at the webinar, we're going to follow up with a LinkedIn DM. And now we've set the expectation. So when we follow up with LinkedIn DM, they're not surprised. So those are the two or three things that I think through. One, do what you're already doing. Just now you've got better data from a targeting perspective. It should be more effective. if these people don't know you exist, go with indirect channels and prioritize people that already know you exist and are maybe further than account progression model. And the last thing is just set expectations of what their next step looks like so that they aren't surprised by it.
Simple. But yeah, I think that's the part that's overwhelming. It's like the feel that you have to completely overhaul everything because you are running a new strategy. It's like, no, you usually have things that are working, but now one thing that you often see is just like, it all starts with the audience, the targeting, the segmentation. That is the single most critical part of this. The better that is, the better everything else that's going to follow downstream. Input is your output. That's the biggest part. Let's talk destination for a second. People are very smart. We've been trained. Go to the top right corner of any website when you do want to finally talk to people. But when you're sitting in that middle ground of the recruitment agency space is quite commoditized. I don't think anyone's going to disagree with that statement. So how are you going about bridging the gap from you exist, you're a company out there, to I'm going to hire you as an agency? Like, how are you thinking about that lens?
For context, I would also argue that the marketing agency space is very commoditized. So again, I'm right there with you. One, unique niche positioning and an actual perspective makes all of this much easier. So, I mean, if you dig into account-based marketing, it is not scrappy ever. It's actually associated as one of the most expensive marketing programs. By that word association, for those that know account-based marketing, that was in and of itself a niche position that piqued interest and was intriguing. So I don't think everybody should go do a rebrand, but maybe actually go have something that's interesting because this is all a lot easier if you have interesting perspectives on the market. And when you choose your market, it's easier to become more interesting. There's a guy, I'm a part of a thing called C12, which is 12 Christian business leaders. There's a guy in my C12 group that runs Turner Staffing, and they only do staffing for the mining industry. They have a very unique perspective that mining is an underappreciated, underserved industry that actually makes the world literally go round. So they care deeply about mining and miners, and they make sure that miners get paid fairly. So if you're going to work with Turner Staffing, you're going to get high quality miners and foremen and supervisors, but you're going to pay them a great wage. And they'll stick around with you for years and years. Very specific positioning. So at the awareness stage, if you don't align with that, you're not going to talk to them. So it's easier because you attract the right people on the front end. So there's that side. And then the other thing is, I referenced it earlier, but you likely are sitting on a landmine of opportunities in your Google Drive folder. You just haven't made them publicly accessible. So look at your Google Drive folder. How do you deliver? Can you turn that into a standardized template in an hour? And then put that on the website and then help people get more talent. Now, you may be thinking, you're like me, crap, like they may actually take our templates and go do something with it. 90% of people won't. They just don't have the time. It's not an issue of knowledge. It's an issue of time. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, you know, it's awesome. They might, and they may go get one hire with it. And then when they go to hire 10 more, who are they going to talk to? The person that helped them for free. So you end up actually accelerating these larger deal cycles because you help smaller deals on the front end, and then you end up just getting the large ones. So again, if I'm in your shoes as a recruiter, look at what you already have today for destinations that are just templates, make those things publicly accessible. And then the other thing, just because it's like really tactical, upload everything you have that is not company sensitive information on your perspective, your process, everything into a ChatGPT, and then just say, can you map out 30 days of social content topics? And then you have now allowed something that you already had access to then tell you your own perspective. Because you may be like, I'm just a recruiter. I didn't think that what I thought was that interesting or intriguing because I just did account-based marketing. Then I launched a business called Scrappy ABM, and people were like, that's a really interesting perspective. Like, I didn't know. I just think this way. So like, I've never had anybody else's brain. So if you upload it and you start to post about it publicly, you may end up finding people also find your perspective very interesting. And then you can route them towards your templates that help them today. And then they still need help actually doing the recruiting, at which point they'll hire you.
You can see why people appreciate how you chose Scrappy ABM is the name. With that, it's how do you, you know, make the most of what you have and everything. There's these different studies about it, but just the concept of human reciprocity. So what you're talking about, like giving content away, cool, you just made one hire with this. I love that. I'm beyond happy for you. Now you have 10, you come to you. there's a local tire shop nearby us that they, you go in with a flat tire or a leaking tire, you go in. I remember the first time I went in, gave them the keys, hey, front right tire, it's leaking air, blah, blah, blah. Sit around for a half hour, comes back out, they give me the keys, they go, you're all set. I go, what do I owe you? They go, it's on the house. Don't worry about it. Come by next time. Where do you think I went when I needed tires? They're just like, okay, yeah, this is a $5 fix in parts and 10 minutes of labor. That's $20. But he's going to come back when he needs an $800 set of car tires. They will trade that all day because that guarantees them that future business. Yeah. And that's how we really need to think about this type of content reciprocity, is you're front loading that so that when they come, you're not trying to win on Google, who's the best recruitment agency for minors in North Dakota, but Scrappy ABM, XYZ agency. They're coming straight to you with that. And that's what a lot of this is doing, by doing it with the right people.
If I can just give one more super practical example, we are hosting a 6-hour full day workshop completely for free called ABM in a Day. And we're just giving away the actual strategy development process that we run with all of our clients. We didn't even promote it. And we already had 80 people register for a 6-hour workshop.
That's amazing.
So I don't know what the ROI is going to be at this moment because we haven't done it yet, but we're talking about doing this as a quarterly ongoing thing, because the reciprocity that we'll get and the trust that we'll get will more than return everything else that we invest in that, because it's just my time. And I'll be super clear, my time is valuable. I'm a CEO, yada, yada. But also, if you're a small business owner, your time may also not actually be that valuable yet. And you have to then build the business. So by building your brand and your reputation, by giving things away, you can actually then make your time significantly more valuable. So if I'm a recruiter, how to build a hiring plan to scale in a day. And then you just give away the actual process through which you could build a hiring plan. And then you have a landing page. Are you planning to make 10 plus hires in the next 90 days? Here's how to build a hiring roadmap and plan. And guess who's going to sign up for that? People that want to make 10 plus hires in the next 90 days. And guess who's not going to be able to figure out how to make 90 or 10 hires in 90 days? Probably everyone on there, because they don't have the time to do it. So then you have a list of people that you say, hey, you follow up 90 days later. Did you make all your hires? Probably didn't. And now you can say, can we help you with that? So just do that. Sorry, I get really passionate about this stuff.
Yeah, no, we overcomplicate things. When we step back and stop trying to be the super methodical, super sophisticated thing, it's just like, take off your hat of whatever it is that you do in your profession. What's your end user trying to accomplish at the end of the day? Just set that path in front of them. Say you've gotten started with your account-based prospecting strategy. You're 6 months in, you're a couple quarters in. What are you looking at to understand, like, is this working? Am I doing the right things? What type of measurement or KPIs, anything, should they be measuring?
Such a great question. One, you probably won't be surprised that I get asked all the time. So the big question is, where did we start? Sorry, Sam. Can you hear my daughter having a meltdown in the background?
That's another day in the life here.
So. Okay. If you can, I'm sorry. We try to soundproof the room pretty all right. It just doesn't work every day.
No worries.
It depends on where you start. So as an example, if you were to build an account-based prospecting effort based on your current CRM data, so this is closed lost opportunities, it's people that have previously booked a meeting but maybe no-showed. These are people that have downloaded something or attended a webinar. Like, they're people that already know you exist and have engaged with your brand at some point. Closed lost, what we have seen, closed lost being people that talked to you previously and didn't move forward for any number of reasons. Data that we have found would suggest that 60 to 80% of close loss reasons can change. And especially in the hiring front, oftentimes people don't move forward because they're like, I think I want to give this a shot myself. So you lose to status quo, not typically a competitor. So if you follow up, again, 90 days later, 60 days later, 180 days later, and say, hey, I know you're looking to hire these key roles. Did you hire them? This is a direct conversion-based program. So if they have, awesome. Send them a congratulatory gift, because no one does that. You didn't win the business and then they made the hire and you're like, that's amazing. Congratulations. I know this is a key hire for you. I'm happy for you. Send them a $25 Amazon gift card or something. Like, just something small, but like, that's enough to stand out. And then 20% on average will come back into your pipeline because they didn't solve the problem yet. So that's typically within a trailing 90 days. So from when you launch, look at the amount of pipeline you're targeting, multiply that by 0.2, and that's what you should expect on average to re-enter into your pipeline within the quarter. So like that is option A. Option B, if you say, I hate all the people in our CRM and I don't want to talk to any of them, which is a side note, if that's true, what have you been doing? But let's say that is the case and we want to go after entirely new people. Brand recall takes 3 to 6 months. So brand recall functionally just means, do these people know we exist and have they associated us to the problem that we solve? That's it. So if you're 3 to 6 months in, what you're looking for, and that's what people hate, is engagement. And you may get some pipeline, but like you're looking for, these people are on our website, they've engaged in some of our content, they may have booked a meeting. But when we look at an ABM program, if you're starting with a completely cold audience, we're just trying to get them involved and engaged in the first 3 to 6 months. And then it's based on their levels of engagement and the signals that we're seeing that then determines when it's time for them to buy. To make this super practical for a moment, Sam and I were talking right before we pressed record on this. Our business has generated 3-ish million in pipeline in 2.5 weeks. It's mainly because budgets opened up and it's the second half of the year. So I could do everything in my power to just ask people to book meetings. But if it's May or June as a marketing agency, I don't typically see that much come back. So again, it's also time of year and understanding the seasonality of your business that will then determine what those 3 to 6 months look like. The biggest joke that I've been sharing publicly now is people launching an ABM pilot program in April as a 3-month pilot and saying ABM failed because they didn't generate any revenue is like the world's most hilarious joke to me now. So also, when is the 3 to 6 months in the year? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, seasonality. But even just for those looking to start, I think that's so impactful for them to know is this is the long game here. We're not, yes. This isn't just a light switch approach to generating new business. You're developing the relationships. You have to just get that awareness started first before even getting them into the middle of funnel, before even getting them to say, I have a problem or anything. Yes, you'll find a couple of people come in where you're just right place, right time. They're like, oh,
yeah.
I didn't know you hired miners in our area. Cool. We've been struggling with that. Let's go. But more often than not, it's, I'm not hiring one right now, or we haven't thought about it, or we've done this in-house, but they haven't done that great. Maybe we should explore it with the next one that might be months, quarters down the line. So a lot of it's just what we've been talking about here, just front-loading all of it. Whew, Mason, it's been a fun one.
Super fun.
Parting thoughts. Where can people find you, learn more about you? I know you're constantly sharing ABM content. Drop all the places.
Yeah, I mean, if you Google Scrappy ABM specifically, not ABM agency, because apparently we don't show up, but if you Google Scrappy ABM, there's a website. We've got a newsletter that drops practical playbooks. We've got a podcast that's got about 200 episodes. We do webinars all the time. So just go follow the Scrappy ABM LinkedIn page. Essentially, we took the space holes approach. So if you just look up Scrappy ABM, we own everything that is Scrappy ABM. So you should be able to find us.
Brilliant. And so much of the philosophy and the strategy, swap out the words B2B SaaS, tech, anything else, like it applies at this point to everyone listening here. Yes. So Mason, as always, appreciate the conversation. So much fun. Could geek out for hours on this. Might have to do a part two at some point as we get some follow-up questions. So thank you for coming, man. Truly appreciate it.
Of course. Thanks for having me. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Scrappy ABM. If you're looking for more content just like this, I highly recommend you go subscribe to our newsletter. We release weekly playbooks so that you have the actionable ways in which you can start to build an ABM program today. Just go to scrappyabm.com/newsletter to subscribe. And if you enjoyed this episode, we'd really appreciate it if you'd leave a 5-star review and hit the notification bell so you never miss an episode. I look forward to seeing you in the next one.